Hi, welcome to another edition of the PCRF podcast. My name is Dave Page, and I'm on the Board of Advisors for the Pre-Hospital Care Research Forum. I'm joined today with
Dr. Aaron Burnett. I'm the Assistant Medical Director at Regents Hospital EMS in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Dr. Keith Wesley. I'm the Medical Director at Health East Medical Transportation in St. Paul, Minnesota.
And Marshall Washick, paramedic with Health East Medical Transportation in St. Paul.
I should have probably said joined by. I thought about that after I said that. Well. Here we go. Fatal and non-fatal injuries among emergency medical technicians and paramedics. This is a study. I'm really apologize for butchering your name, especially because I think your work is incredible here. But Audrey Richard, Suzanne Marsh, and Paul Moore. And this appeared in Pre-Hospital Emergency Care, the October-December edition in 2011. So we are, I believe this to be a landmark study. I can, you all can disagree with me, and we can have a good conversation about it. But I typically seldom bring up PEC articles. Maybe I should do more of it in the GEMS column, because I feel like we all probably read PEC, and it's more important to find research that in journals that we might not read. The reader index, on the other hand, for PEC appears to be pretty low, and from what I understand, many street people don't even know that pre-hospital emergency care exists. So it is the peer-reviewed journal for the National Association of EMS Physicians, EMS Educators, the National Association of EMTs, the EMS state officials. So it is our official way of communicating research, and I, again, believe this to be a landmark study. There's been just simply very few studies that report on fatalities and safety of EMS workers. And those that have been done on samples that were either samples by surveys or low reporting of data. This, on the other hand, is the way they did this study. They have looked at Bureau of Labor Statistics census data for fatal occupational injuries, and the occupational supplement to the National Electronic Injury Surveillance System. They looked at NIOSH data, and really went across the board looking for in large databases over an extended period of time, 2003 to 2007, do a marvelous job of explaining the difference between tracking data for professional paid compensated EMTs and ambulance workers. By that, they do include air medical transportation as EMS workers, which I really applaud again, as looking at the whole of transportation and care of EMS patients. And then also comparing that to, or also looking for uncompensated, very professional, but uncompensated volunteer, non-paid EMTs and paramedics that work in systems that simply don't compensate them. So they made an attempt at including all of that data. Now, to give you a little bit of a comparison here, the average, the way that fatalities are reported nationwide is by 100 per 100,000 people, and on average, you know, the average fatality rate for occupational workers for any profession is around 4, so 4 per 100,000. In the firefighter ranks, I believe we were talking about right around 6, 6.1 or 6 is per 100,000 workers is the fatality rate for firefighters. So we all know that police and fire are very dangerous, and so they get a lot of attention, and sometimes if it's an EMS worker that works for a fire department, they get very similar attention when there's a line of duty death. However, ambulance workers in particular today aren't even in some cases, if you're working for a non-governmental service, you're not even covered by the federal death benefit. Just recently, they've been introducing legislation about EMS workers for non-profit ambulance services that are private non-profit. But if you're a private for-profit, then you fall under this category of you're not a federal, you don't get the federal death benefit if you die in line of duty. So there's just very little reporting, and therefore very little, I guess, oomph to go talk to our legislators and people who make decisions about how much we get paid or what kind of benefits we get to say that we're a dangerous profession. So in this climate of safety, and I'll stop pontificating here and just talk about this particular project, I believe this to be just a great landmark study. After they don't just report on fatal injuries, they also report on non-fatal injury in general, and they used a different occupational health database in order to report on that. So their results are staggering. They're concerning for our profession. They identified 99,400 non-fatal injuries that were, and their methodologies that they looked at emergency department data that was reported as an on-the-job injury for an EMS worker, and 65 fatalities. So that's roughly 13 fatalities per year. That includes the fatalities from the helicopter services. And they spent the time, kudos to them, to triage very carefully whether you were a firefighter that died in the line of duty, if you were performing EMS duties, or you were just simply fighting a fire and performing fire or rescue duties. So so bottom line is they really tried to tease out how many people are EMS workers that are dying. And after all of this work, they come up with a fatal injury rate of 6.3 per 100,000 full-time equivalents. In their abstract conclusion, if you read a little bit deeper into their paper, there's a 7.0, so 7 deaths per 100,000 workers number for EMTs. Interestingly, there's a couple of extra teasers in here that I thought were worth talking about, one of which is women typically don't have as high of a lethality in the workplace. And women in this study, obviously, even though they accounted for somewhere around 25% of the EMS workforce, end up accounting for, it's a 9 times higher than average death rate. So the death part was one huge, I think, enormous piece. The other, it makes EMS the most dangerous profession, period. And so now there's evidence to back that up. The other interesting thing, I don't know what you guys thought about this, but the most common injury was were sprains and strains, and I thought, well, that's normal. But right away, the sprains and strains were the most common, which really surprised me, was hands. And that I did not expect. I expected low back to come up, which is the number 2 cause in there. So that's in there. But hands just didn't, you know, I didn't even think about that in the first place. Of course, these injuries mostly are occurring when people are involved in some sort of transportation. So it's either driving the ambulance on the way to or the way back, or on the roadway, but getting struck on the roadway. That's the most common fatalities. And of course, crashes of helicopters made up significant, something around 30%. So what do you guys think?
So, I mean, we always think in EMS about needle sticks and hepatitis and HIV, but this really argues that the things that we need to be thinking about are more than just the sharps. We need to be thinking about how are we getting to the scene and from the scene to the hospital. When you turn those lights on your rig, you just kick up your liability and your risk for being involved in a motor vehicle accident tremendously. Turning the lights on doesn't really protect you. It puts you at more risk, and recognizing that is going to be very important for us as a profession.
I agree. I think that we've been focused on helicopter crashes of late, and those make big headlines, and you know, three or more people are killed at a time on those. We simply have not been focused on that lights and siren issue somewhat. I mean, there's been a couple of studies on how whether or not it shortens your trip to the hospital, but there's no data on the number of people we kill on the way to help other people, whether it's people struck by an ambulance or people in a car that were struck by an ambulance on the way to the hospital.
Well, I don't know. I think this is good information, but I think there's a part of the story that needs to be better fleshed out. And they were only looking at compensated EMS providers.
No, they included volunteers.
No, this is compensated.
They mentioned that their volunteer population may have been miscalculated or misreported because they may not report it as a work-related injury. But I do give them credit for saying, as much as possible, they looked at both populations. If anything, this estimate is lower, Dr. Wesley. If anything, because they didn't include the volunteer side, this 7.0 number is actually less than what it really could be if they included all the volunteers.
Oh, no, I agree. The real question, and again, looking through their numbers, you know, how many of the compensated EMTs and paramedics are also firefighters? And yes, while they may have taken out firefighting-related deaths, how many of the fatalities, which were transportation-related, were during as responding to the scene as a firefighter who just also happened to be an EMT?
Yeah, and I think that was not included. These are crashes by ambulances or in the performance of EMS duties. We could all split a hair
if
there's a first response engine on a fire truck that's going on a medical and they die, was that, you know, that's an EMS death. They're responding to a medical emergency as a medical aid person. They're not responding because of a fire. So.
But if the fire service stats are reporting that as a line of duty fire death.
Oh, absolutely.
Then you're
they
double
are.
Counting and say,
no,
you
well,
know,
the fire people may count that in. I like the fact that these folks actually focused on, let's just talk about responses to medical emergencies, to EMS type calls. So if you start taking those into account, then I agree that if you were to, you can't aggregate these.
Right. And I'll concede that if you're right. I'm just not sure that I see that in the numbers. But one thing that I found very, very interesting was in table one, when they were looking at the demographics and region, what's going on in the West? The fatality rate per 100,000 was 10.3 in the West, 6.6 in the South, 4.1 in the Midwest, and 3.9 in the Northeast. So what's unique about the West part of this country that the fatality rate is double that of the Northeast?
Yeah.
That would be interesting to know. I mean, the distribution with these kinds of numbers, it would be interesting to take each of those regions and break down the event of transportation, highway, air, and other, and see if there's something uniquely different, because that is the one clear, when you look at the list of fatality rates, other than also some weird spike in 2004. What happened there? When 2003 through 2007, the fatality rate, you know, stayed pretty much around 4 to 5, but in 2004 it was 11.7. What happened in 2004?
Yeah, and maybe it's a difference in the reporting structure of those databases that included more or less occupational injury or death. It is, to me, it is criminal that our profession doesn't keep track of this in a national database that's our own. I think that fire and police have established good tracking mechanisms for that kind of stuff, and we simply do not. We don't know how many people die in the line of duty, and we depend on volunteer reporting of that to perhaps get inducted into a memorial service that may or may not represent all of the people who die. So I think bringing attention to this matter was key, and I would encourage anyone listening to this podcast to print a copy of this article, find it in the October-December PEC 2011, and make sure you have it in your pocket when you go visit City Hall next time your city council is trying to decide whether or not, you know, EMS should get helmets, EMS should have you know, additional training, or trying to figure out ways in which traffic laws can get enacted to be safer out there. Thank you again for tuning in to another edition of the PCRF podcast.